She knows there's no success like failure, and that failure's no success at all.
She knows there's no success like failure, and that failure's no success at all. Bob Dylan. After my Zen teacher died, a fellow practitioner said to me, "Natalie, your writing succeeded. You didn't follow the teachings. Everything Roshi taught us was about how to fail." We both laughed. But I think it was true that we were trained in defeat. Downfall brings us to the ground, facing the nitty-gritty, things as they are, with no glitter. Success cannot last forever. Everyone's time runs out. This is not a popular notion, but it is true.
That's Natalie Goldberg reading from her memoir, The Great Failure. Goldberg has a lot to say about failure, because two of the most important men in her life, her father and her Zen master, failed her. Goldberg told Anne Strangechamps why she had to write about it.
I think I chose the word failure because it's such a frightening thing for us in our society. We're always running after success and running away from failure. So I thought, let me turn around and sink into my own fear of failure. And I actually begin with a time when I completely blew a keynote speech with 700 people in the audience. And I found that when you really sink into failure or disappointment, it brings you down to the ground and you see things as they really are rather than through all our illusions. Really, success is a great illusion. We always want better, bigger. But finally, you know, how much can you get? It's like how many candies can you get? Eventually, even the success leads to a tummy ache.
There's a very specific failure that you write a lot about in this book, the failure of your father. And you write that he sexually abused you. What kind of sexual abuse?
Well, my father was very intrusive, had poor sexual boundaries, and was abusive sexually. You know, he kissed me inappropriately. He was always trying to see me in the shower, walk in on me, never knocked, and making comments that I never felt safe. When you cross a certain boundary and you break some trust, it doesn't matter how far they go. It's already in the cells of your body, tremendous fear, and you're not comfortable. And that was important for me to understand.
I think it can be both empowering and also just devastating when you first begin to put that kind of experience, put words onto that experience and begin to say, you know, this was wrong. This happened and it wasn't right and it doesn't happen to everybody. What happened in your life when you began to name it?
When I started to name it, first of all, I had incredible rage. I mean, I just rage, not conscious. It was almost like involuntary rage and crying and acknowledgement. And I didn't talk to my father for 3 years. And then we kind of broke through. Not that he ever recognized it. I began to understand the nature of denial. I understood more about what goes on as a human being, that things aren't black and white. And yet I didn't talk to him for 3 years. And then I missed them. I walked around and thought, there's someone on earth that looks like me. So I called them, and in my father's own odd way, he's so unpsychological, and he's not able to really communicate, but he starts talking about vacuum cleaners with me, because he used to sell vacuum cleaners. And I understood in his way, he was trying to make a connection again.
You've written so much about writing as a kind of Zen practice, and I'm wondering whether the process of writing about your father and this betrayal and your gradual coming to terms with it, whether it was the writing itself that brought something out of you, some understanding that you might not have achieved otherwise.
Absolutely. When you write, and especially planning to put it in a book, you have to be articulate. You have to know what you say, think, and feel. And you write it down, and does this make sense, Natalie? And also, I got to write about some of the funny, you know, wonderful things I love about him.
Tell that story. There's a very funny story about the day you tried to teach your father and mother meditation.
Oh, yes, yes. My father said, "Nat, so tell us, what is meditation anyway?" So being incredibly naive, I thought, ah. I said, "Dad, would you like me to teach you?" He said, "Okay." And I run into the house and get a bell. And I think, accoutrements, that will make it official. And I say, "Okay, I'm going to ring the bell 3 times. And when I ring it, we're just going to sit for 10 minutes and feel our breath. If our mind wanders, come back to our breath." And my mother and father get very excited and think, "Oh, this will be fun." So I do the bells, and then we're done. The 10 minutes are over. And my father says, "What's the big deal?" And I said, "Well, didn't you, you know, did you have a lot of thoughts?" He said, "I didn't have a single thought." I said, "None?" He said, "No, not a one." I said, "Well, did you feel peaceful?" He said, "Not particularly. It was like it always is when you don't talk. That's why people talk, Natalie. Otherwise, nothing is happening."
Are you thinking my father's a Zen master and I never knew it?
Yeah, I'm thinking, what? He didn't have a thought? And then I said, "Well, let's try again." And he said, "Well, this time I want to ring the bell." And he grabbed the bell from me and he rang 3 times formally. We're sitting for 2.5 minutes. And then he starts to ring the bell again and sing, "Hello, Dolly. Well, hello, Dolly. It's so nice to have you back where you belong." And I think, you know, I don't have to save my father. He doesn't count as a sentient being. He's in another category entirely.
You've gotten to the point where you could write about it and think about your father with some humor, even though he'd done terrible things. And then your great Zen teacher, Roshi, died. And there was another betrayal somewhat 6 years after his death?
Yes. Yeah. And I thought I had found the perfect teacher. And in reaction, I realize now, to my father, I thought I was completely safe. Because when you're safe, your true heart can come out. And I wanted to experience my true heart. And I couldn't as a little girl because I was always on guard.
So you found Roshi instead?
Yes. And I made him what I wanted him to be, as, you know, totally ethical and perfect.
So what was it you discovered about him?
Well, 6 years after he died, it came out that he'd been having some sexual relationships with his students. So he crossed something, and I felt very betrayed and heartbroken. And here again was someone I loved deeply and was betrayed by.
And you'd already come to terms with one imperfect father, and Roshi was supposed to be the substitute, the perfect spiritual father, the one who cared only about your spiritual well-being.
Yes, I know. Now I realize how naive I was, and how innocent, and how full of longing to find a place of safety.
How long did it take you to forgive Roshi?
I don't think I've ever forgiven my father or Roshi. I don't think that's my job. What I have done is seen things deeply. In the book, I don't just point a finger at Roshi. I really look at the nature of betrayal. How can you hold someone you really love who also hurts you, who betrays you? Hold the whole thing, not just blank out and say you love them or blank out and hate them. How do you sit in the gray matter? And I think that's what it is to grow up and to realize what it is to be a human being. There's no perfect life. But what I also realized, and I write about it at the end, this is a true honoring of these people. When I die, I don't want someone to just say, "She was a great writer, she was a great teacher." I want someone to look deeper and say, "You know, she also made some big mistakes. She was lonely, and still, I loved her." that feels like I would be really honored. I loved these two people, and I wanted to really honor them.
Natalie Goldberg talking with Anne Strainchamps. Her memoir is called The Great Failure.